Warfare. Yeah, now the theme song is starting all over again, just as it did last night. It's mocking me. I'm being mocked by my own theme song. Could it get any more disgusting, more disrespectful? I don't get any respect from my own theme song. It starts just at the beginning of my opening monologue. Where was I? Class Warfare, that's where I was, and I'm back again. Today's date, November 3rd, already. It was just August, it was just July, it was just June and May. Now it's November. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Today's date, November 3rd, 2011. I am currently in North Carolina, and I'll be here for the next few days, until Sunday at least. Well, at the most. United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun, class warfare. That's where we are today. That's what we're going to talk about. So let's get this party started. The entitlement state. The entitlement state is morally bankrupt. America, in fact, is becoming morally bankrupt. After Rick Perry called Social Security a Ponzi scheme, pundits everywhere smugly assured the world that Perry is a crazy loon, because after all, the government can never really go broke. It can never really go bankrupt. It can always print money to pay its debts. Of course, that's hardly a comfort to those who know what hyperinflation can do to any economy. In any case, Perry can be condemned for daring to violate the first law of politics, and that is, whatever you do, do not question entitlements. Despite the fact that the big three entitlement programs, Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare, have the U.S. government facing upwards of $100 trillion. That's $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities. They largely remain a third rail. Touch. Not least he be voted out of office quickly. Why are they sacrosanct? That's a question many are asking. Many want to know, why are they? Why are they untouchable? Why are they, quote, unmentionable, end quote? Because whatever else you can say about the entitlement state, no one disputes that it is a moral imperative. Inefficient? Maybe. Expensive? Oh, yeah. But morally questionable? Absolutely not. The problem with the entitlement state is not simply that it's bankrupt and that it's bankrupting this country. The problem is that it is morally bankrupt. Because the basic principle behind the entitlement state is that a person's need entitles him to other people's wealth. It's that you have a duty to spend some irreplaceable part of your life laboring, not for the sake of your own life and your own happiness, but for the sake of others. Ayn Rand spoke about this in Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, just to name two. If you are a productive and self-supporting citizen, and then according to the entitlement state, you are in hock to those who are not. In Marx's memorable phrase, and I quote, from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs, end quote. As we argued in the past, no system that treats you as other people's servant can be called moral. What made America the noblest nation in history and the finest was that it was the first country founded on the idea that each of us has a right to live and work for his own sake. That it's our own job to try to make the most of our own lives, and that the government's sole purpose is to protect our freedom to do so. That's it. Some have raised objections to this line of argument. Here are three of the most popular objections. I wrote them down so I wouldn't forget. When Social Security first passed under FDR, most Americans regarded being, quote, on the dole, end quote, as shameful. One way the problem garnered widespread support was by positioning itself not as welfare, but as insurance. Medicare would later take the same tact. You pay in when you're young and healthy, and when money is paid out to you, you're not going to be on the dole. You're simply getting back what's yours. This was always a fraud. Your taxes aren't invested in order to generate your future benefits. They are used to supply benefits to current enrollees. If a private insurance company operated that way, racking up $100 trillion in debt that it couldn't pay, it would be bankrupt and its executives would be sent to prison. But the most vital difference is this. The entitlement state is involuntary. For the rational person, insurance is something he chooses to buy when he judges that a given policy represents a net gain. We can all agree on that. Even in a voluntary competitive system where profit-seeking companies tailor their policies to your individual needs, insurance isn't for everyone. A young entrepreneur might rationally decide to forego homeowners insurance in order to make his fledgling business a success. But the entitlement state forces us into costly one-size-fits-all programs, regardless of whether we think it's in our own best and personal interest. Number two, the entitlement state benefits everyone. Far from offering genuine benefits, whenever the government takes people's money and decides how that money is best spent, it makes life harder for rational people. A rational person needs the freedom to plan his own life, make his own choices, and support his own existence. Consider the impact of Social Security. In a world without Social Security, the rational person would think about his own long-range plans and interests. He might rationally decide that he loves working and never want to retire, or that he'd rather invest his current income in growing his business today and start saving once he has established himself. When he does invest, he will think carefully about where to park his savings, consult experts, judiciously diversify. And as a result, he will know where his investments stand and why, and will not be at the mercy of a political process that might raise the retirement age, curtail promised benefits, i.e. Social Security. It's a big downside. All its alleged benefits he could attain much better on his own. Now, President George Bush sought to privatize Social Security in this very way, and he was vilified for wanting to do so. So why? Why is he deprived of his freedom, man, to live and plan his own life? because some people may choose not to plan. Social Security and the entitlement state, more broadly, institutes a basic injustice. The rational and productive are sacrificed in the name of the irrational. From each according to his ability, to each according to his needs. But what about those who can't take care of themselves, you say? Well, in any industrialized nation, it is only a fraction of a sliver of a minority who are unable to support themselves. And even in days before America's entitlement state, they didn't strive or starve in streets. Most turned to friends and family. Many others turned to voluntary social insurance programs run by private mutual aid societies, like the Security Benefits Association. And some turned to private charities. If Americans a century ago could flourish without an entitlement state, how much easier would it be today, when even most poor people own cars and television sets, microwaves, computers? The entitlement state was never needed to ensure that the unable got fed. It is and always has been geared not to the unable, but to the unwilling. So that entitlement mentality that expects payment according to his needs. And by rewarding that mentality, we foster that mentality. The entitlement state is geared to the unwilling at the expense of the willing and able. What could be greater evidence that it is morally bankrupt? Here, folks, we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back, and then we're going to get to all this really good stuff about what's going on today in America, a la class warfare. We'll be right back. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report.
Promise to change direction. $800 billion in stimulus. Trillions for government health care. 2 million jobs. Gone. Left turn after left turn. America's headed the wrong way fast. 6 million foreclosures, $14 trillion in debt, $500 billion in higher taxes, and the worst long-term unemployment in generations. Don't let Obama drive us to disaster. Change direction.
Republican National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Long Talk Radio.
Have you been? Have you been? Oh, to David Graham, author of Stay Mad on Stay Mad Radio.
Tony Bonuti is the ex-conservative, hosting his show weekday afternoons from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Wahoo Media Network. Join the discussion.
You're not planning on wearing that, are you?
You need the Wahoo Wake Up Call to keep you up to date. Weekday morning.
Weekday morning
starting at 8 a.m. Eastern
on the Wahoo Media Network.
We've made too many compromises already. Too many retreats. They invade our space and we fall back. They assimilate entire worlds and we fall back. Not again. The line must be drawn here. This far, no farther.
Hey, sports fans!
Join Ralph Lanier Fridays from 10 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a fast-paced sports talk show with scores, stats, and opinions about almost anything.
Almost anything.
Thanks for listening to the Wahoo Media Network.
All right. You're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Well, it seems Obama has gotten his wish for the class warfare that he has asked for. I take the title of tonight's show from a heading on the Fox Nation. It seems the President of the United States technically, I suppose, unofficially called for class warfare is getting what he asked for. And it's the streets of Oakland, once again, aside from the 60s, is on fire. It's a serious mess. And we're going to go ahead and play the clip for you. That's just a little bit of what's going on in Oakland, California, and in other places across the country. I was a little bit late because I predicted this would happen a couple of weeks ago, and now it's happening. So here we go. We've got what the President of the United States and many liberals were asking for. Class warfare. People taking it to the streets. That's all the President has left. That's all the President has left is the people going out and destroying things. Does he believe in his wildest dreams that this is somehow going to benefit him? There he goes. President Obama on the campaign stump. Rails against the rich, saying our wealth gap shows a need for a fairer approach. How many times have we heard this before throughout history? A fairer approach. What does that mean? Taking from the wealthy to give to the poor? Think about this. I'm going to make an analogy here, and I hope you can. I hope you follow me here. One of the most, several of the most accomplished boxers in history, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson, made millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, boxing in the ring. All are broke. Sugar Ray Leonard, broke. Mike Tyson, certainly broke. Muhammad Ali, if he didn't have Lonnie, his latest wife, his wife of the last 15, 20 years, he'd be broke too. He's certainly not making the kind of money he made in his heyday. Certainly not. He certainly didn't save anything. Just because you acquire millions of dollars doesn't mean that you're going to keep it. So what does the president believe is a fairer approach? Who says what is fair? Ventrell says in the chat room. Who says what is fair? Exactly. That's exactly where I'm going. Does he really believe our economic problems have been caused by insufficient taxes on the rich? Insufficient taxes overall? If not, then what can we conclude about his insistence on hammering that point rather than addressing a real cause and real solutions? Not everybody can be rich and wealthy. You can be rich in your heart and you can have a rich and full life, but not everybody can have tons of money. Obama's careless attack on the rich and his efforts to divide Americans on the basis of their income and wealth can best be seen as a diversion, an attempt to distract Americans' attention from his failure to address the interrelated economic malaise and the fiscal crisis. Barack Obama is just, he's providing a head fake. Now, before we can solve our problems, we have to correctly identify them. For starters, we have catastrophic national debt, reckless deficits in excess of $1 trillion since Obama took office, with no end in sight, unsustainable entitlement programs, including Obamacare, which, contrary to Obama's assurances, and we know what they're worth, will dramatically drive up the cost curve further. Obscene levels of discretionary spending, administration-driven anti-business regulatory processes, and a depressed economy that is exacerbating our deficit and debt problems. We are headed for a massive train wreck. In fact, Ventrell in the chat room writes, Obama made over $7 million last year. Why isn't he considered to be too wealthy? In fact, he probably believes he is, but why isn't he giving most of that money away? Yes, I have heard the stories that the president has written a check or two, or three or four, to some needy families out of his own pocket. Well, yeah. Hello, I've done the same thing many times. But you know, how about the president engage in some meaningful solutions instead of dividing the nation? How has the president approached these problems? He was able to force through a massive stimulus package on the theory that government-generated spending of borrowed money would stimulate the economy. He didn't say it may or may not work. So we have to take the risk of dangerously increasing an already dangerous national debt because we have no other options. Rather, he promised an that unemployment would come down if we followed him over the cliff, Thelma and Louise style. Well, we didn't follow him, but his Democrat Congress did, and he got his stimulus bill passed, and it not only didn't alleviate the problem, but also made it much worse. The economy is sicker than it was before, and the national debt continues to explode. What we have here, folks, and I'll say it, I've said it many times, and I'll say it again, is a man who has no idea how these things are supposed to work. Instead of restoring certainty to the economy, he has refused to allow the Bush tax cut rates on the highest incomes to become permanent. He has substantially ramped up excessive anti-business regulations in pursuit of the environmental crusade of the moment, the flavor of the week. He has substantially ramped up excessive anti-business regulations all over the country. The blame Bush MAME doesn't pass the laugh test anymore. And the tsunami excuse is embarrassing and pathetic for a president of the United States to throw out. His effort to blame Republicans is similarly absurd on its face because he did get his agenda through, Obamacare and all, except for cap and trade, which he couldn't get passed even with his own Democrat-controlled Congress. So how about his continued assault on the rich, his fail-safe scapegoating device, one that flies in the face of everything Obama has ever claimed about himself in terms of bipartisanship, unity, civility, and fundamental honesty? The rich are not undertaxed. As of objective statistics and empirical data demonstrate, not one of the problems plaguing the nation today has anything to do with the rich being undertaxed. They are, if anything, overtaxed. And punishing them will make the economy and our debt problems worse. Nevertheless, Obama is ramping up the class warfare all day long, every day, trying to turn Americans against one another by stoking the flames of envy and greed. Folks, I could go there, and I think I will. What entity known to man pits one person against another? It's called the devil, Beelzebub, Lucifer. Now, I'm not suggesting that the president of the United States is the Antichrist. Not today. But ask yourselves, what kind of evil mischief occurs in a man's mind when he pits one person against another, least of all one segment of the nation against the other? Imagine the president of the United States, the highest office in the land, the most, arguably the most powerful man on the face of the earth, pitting citizen against citizen, American against American. Not since the Civil War have we seen such, or witnessed such a travesty of the presidency. Barack Hussein Obama should be impeached on the basis of this alone. Now, what do we do about this? Do we believe that the rich are being undertaxed? Look at what the president wrought. He comes into office. He says that today is the day when the seas receded and the earth healed. Today is the day when we'll have a new standard of politics. Not just red states, not just blue states, but the United States of America, he said. And yet, he is in office now, and he is pitting American against American, rich against poor. We are all Americans. And a person who has more than somebody else is being pitted as being bad. It's a bad thing. When is that going to trickle down to me and you? Ventrell, Tesla, Karen. Karen's got a whole bunch of goats. When is Karen going to have too many goats? And somebody's going to say, give me some of those goats. Because you've got too many. Oh, eventually it'll get down to you and me. Eventually, when everybody's rich, no one will be. And soon, I'm sitting here in a room that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 computer screens all going at once. Five. I've got 1, 2, 3 computers attached to all five of these screens in one configuration or another. Somebody's going to decide somewhere down the road that I've got too much. That perhaps one of my computers should be confiscated and given to somebody who doesn't have one at all. When we start to vilify the wealthy, those who have more, it's a very slippery slope. And Ventrell says it right in the chat room. He is creating this Occupy movement. Yes, he is. And it started a couple of years ago with he didn't come into office to benefit some fat cat bankers. Or one of my personal favorites is he at some point, he said during a press conference, he believes that you've earned enough money. Like, it's his business. I tell you what, I hear that from anybody, they're going to get a smackdown from me personally. He's lucky he's the president of the United States, and I won't do such a thing. But if he were State Senator Barack Obama or just kind of hanging out in Hyde Park, where I used to live, where he has a house, I'd have words with the man. I'd say to him, Private Citizen Obama, what the hell do you think? What is going on in your head when you think that you get to decide how much money I make, how much is enough? Oh, and another one of my favorites. At some point, he's going to decide, or he'd like to decide, how much money a person gets to keep. This is what we elected. This is what the United States elected. A man who wants to decide how much money is enough and how much money you get to keep. Those were his exact words. How much you get to keep. Since when does the President of the United States decide any such thing? Why wasn't he called out for this? Nobody said a word. And when people don't say anything, when these kinds of statements aren't challenged, you get what we have here right now in Oakland and across the country. The president said many times that the rich need to pay their fair share, that those corporate jet owners, oh, they can have their corporate jets, but they just need to pay a little bit more. He said this stuff out loud. He knew that there was a certain faction a certain segment of the population who was listening to him and just about to follow his lead. He stoked, I mean, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. I call him a moron and an idiot, but I don't really believe that, honestly. It was brilliant the way he stoked the fires so very carefully. He didn't have to lift a finger. He didn't have to do anything. He simply stoked the flames.
At some point, we're going to decide how much money you get to keep. And those fat cat bankers. And we're not going to have a corporate jet owner flying around in their corporate jets while some mother has to sit down at the kitchen table and worry about how she's going to send her kid to college. He can have his corporate jet. He just has to pay a little more to ride in it.
Why any halfway decent wealthy person would give money to his campaign, I'll never know. Are we still living in an age where, or at a time after his presidency, where there's a certain amount of white guilt or a certain amount of wealth guilt, where the wealthy believe that, well, you know, the best way to keep these folks off my back so I can live well is to just go ahead and give up some of my jack. I'm just going to give up, you know, a good portion of it. It's not that big of a deal to me. And it'll keep these people off my back. You think that's what it's going to do? Why would any wealthy person give money to the president of the United States? It's beyond me. I can't imagine it. Obama has gotten what he has asked for. And it's not good. It is not good at all. It's not good for you, and it's not good for me. Because sooner or later, it's going to trickle down to me and you. As I've stated many times before, I own two vehicles. I own an SUV, and I own a sedan, a Nissan Maxima. Now, I can only drive one of those vehicles at a time. I paid for both of those vehicles with my hard-earned money. They're mine. But at some point, if we keep going down this road, the president, or maybe some congressman, or maybe even some private citizen is going to decide, hey, Dr. Jones has two vehicles in that garage. He can only drive one of them. And hey, that SUV, I can use that. We can drive a family of five in that thing. He doesn't need that vehicle. Let's go take it. Now, I'm not so much concerned for myself because I can handle myself very well. And I can protect my property. But I'm giving you an example of how it starts with the rich. It starts with those so-called millionaires and billionaires. And when they say millionaires and billionaires, they're not talking about millionaires and billionaires. It's already been proven that they're talking about anybody making over $250,000. What's going to happen when it trickles down to $100,000, $50,000? You've got too much, and I want some of that. That's what we're talking about here. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
I remember America. Sure, you can still find it on a map, but nobody older than 20 thinks this is America. Even if coordinates are the same, we've lost our compass. You don't have a direction without reference, the true north. For America, it was liberty. When we lost the love of liberty, our understanding of liberty, it was just a matter of time before the rest of it was lost. Some think it started when the auto companies were nationalized, or the police state to control the internet, or when certain companies couldn't fail because their relationship with politicians made them too big to fail, and the rest of us, without political influence, were too small to succeed. Sure, that all happened pretty quickly, over just a couple of years, but liberty had been gradually devolving for decades. Some of the more astute, like Ayn Rand, saw it about 50 years before others. She warned us, but people didn't believe it could happen here until it did. Laws had been used to loot productive individuals and businesses, but in the new millennium, under Bush, then Obama, graft, corruption, and crony capitalism were no longer hidden behind closed doors. The looters and their laws came out of hiding like rabid animals that were no longer afraid of humans. It was brought into the spotlight, and it was celebrated as enlightened economic policy. Ayn Rand asked the question in Atlas Shrugged that the rest of us were asking 60 years later. Which failing financial institution will the administration pluck from the flames of crisis? And which will it let roast? Which market or investment technique will the regulators bless? And which, in a capricious change of rules, will it condemn or outlaw? As John Galt said in his radio address,
"You decided you had a right to your wages, but we had no right to our profits. You called it selfish and cruel that men should trade value for value. But you've now established an unselfish society where they trade extortion for extortion."
People who had never produced or managed anything tried to manage every aspect of our lives, and they brought production to a standstill. And eventually, they decided to micromanage the food supply in the name of fairness and safety. And we all know what happened then. Fiction can be a powerful influence, for good or bad. It's too bad more people didn't read Atlas Shrugged.
Why is Ayn Rand's great novel Atlas Shrugged a bestseller today, more than half a century after it was written? It's because our real world today is just like the fictional future that Rand foresaw in Atlas Shrugged. It's a time of crisis and decay, but it's also a world of innovation and achievement. It's a world of heroes and villains, driven by very different philosophies. We wrote I Am John Galt to tell their stories. We look at the heroic innovators who are building our world and show that they're doing it just like the heroes of Ayn Rand's novels. They're using her philosophy of capitalism, reason, objective reality, and self-interest. Who is John Galt? Meet John Allison, the mild-mannered Southerner who created one of America's greatest banking empires. He did it with Ayn Rand's philosophy by getting every one of his tens of thousands of employees to read Atlas Shrugged and live by its code. In the great financial crisis of 2008, his bank was about the only one that didn't need a government bailout. But the government forced Allison to take TARP money anyway. After that, Allison walked away, just like John Galt did. There's so many other Rand heroes in our midst. There's Bill Gates, the genius who built the world's greatest company and the world's greatest personal fortune, only to have his own government call him a criminal for succeeding too much. Isn't he just like Hank Reardon from Atlas Shrugged? And how about Steve Jobs, the brilliant entrepreneur who reinvented computers, movies, music, telephones, just because he thought it was so cool? He's got the same attitude toward life as Howard Rourke from Rand's other great novel, The Fountainhead. Build it? I don't care if they come. You'll meet some real-life Rand villains in our book, too, the parasites who are trying to destroy the world. Remember Wesley Mooch from Atlas Shrugged, the corrupt bureaucrat who destroyed the economy? That's Congressman Barney Frank, who spent years subsidizing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in the name of altruism. When Fannie and Freddie nearly wrecked the U.S. housing market, what did Frank do? Just like Mooch, he demanded wider powers. And you'll meet Paul Krugman, the rabid partisan pundit who spread socialism from the pages of the New York Times and thinks nothing of using the power of the press to destroy his political enemies. He's Ellsworth Toohey, the scheming, dwarfish newspaper columnist straight from the pages of The Fountainhead. These are some of the heroes and villains who move our world. So who is John Galt? I am. You can be too. Read our book and find out how.
All right, we're back. This is C. Robert Jones. Situation report. So, I don't know. The old so-called ancient proverb, "May you live in interesting times," somehow doesn't seem to apply here anymore. We do live in interesting times, don't we? We do. But that was meant to be a curse, not a blessing. If one lives in uninteresting times, then one lives a peaceful, calm, serene, boring existence. We don't live that way now. We live in turmoil. We live in uncertainty. We live in a world, not just the United States, a world where our economy is imploding. We live in a country where our own president seeks to divide us from within. I watch a series called Homeland on one of the cable networks. I think it is Showtime. And in this series, a young Marine sergeant is captured in Afghanistan, and he is tortured and turned, supposedly. He is now a operative for jihad. He comes back to the United States, and even though he wears the uniform of a United States Marine gunnery sergeant, he is a mole. He is a sleeper. I often think of President Obama this way these days. A sleeper. Not really one of us. Not really an American. Oh, he looks the part, doesn't he? He's fairly good looking. He speaks well when he has a teleprompter in front of him. He's supposed to be one of us. And by one of us, I mean an American. A man who is president because he loves this country. A man who is president because he wants to see this country prosper. That's what we thought we elected. That's what we thought we were getting. I thought the guy was an idealist and naive and inexperienced. But now I don't feel that way anymore. I feel that we have in our midst a person who hates America, who does not love this country, who does not love this country the way you and I love it. He wants to fundamentally transform the United States of America. You can't say you love something if you want to change it fundamentally. Suppose you're married. You meet a nice lady. You fall in love. But then you decide that you don't like the way she is. So you want to fundamentally change her. Is that love? Is that love for the woman? Is that love for the guy? Is that love for your damn dog? No. So pretty much what we have in office right now is a man who does not love this country. Not until he's done remaking it into what he thinks it should be. What we have in the White House right here and now is a sleeper. A man who does not love this country. Why else would he pit one segment of this nation against another openly? Why else would he openly seek to subvert the Constitution of the United States by using signing statements and executive orders to go around Congress every single chance he gets? We don't have a president. What we have in our midst is an imposter. A man who does not have America's best interest at heart. I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, I always knew that we would have an ethnic president. It didn't matter to me whether or not he's black or Hispanic, or Asian. I always knew at some point that the president of the United States wouldn't just be, you know, an older white guy. I always thought that way. I didn't care one way or the other, honestly. But I thought, you know, eventually we'd get to that point and, hey, so what? No big deal to me. As long as you have my country's best interest at heart. And, hey, even Bill Clinton had the country's best interest at heart. Even Jimmy Carter, had the country's interest at heart. But I never thought that we would have a country, a president, who did not love America, who would pit Americans against Americans on purpose. Ventrell said it just right. We elected our enemy. This man isn't even American in my – you know what? The whole birth certificate thing, I don't give a damn about that. Because a birth certificate doesn't – it doesn't say to me whether or not you're an American. You're an American if you believe this nation is great, if you believe this nation has – the world's best interest at heart and Americans' best interest at heart. If you believe that we are exceptional, bar none, if you believe that we are the greatest nation on the face of this earth, if you believe America first, if you believe in America and Americans, then damn it, you're an American. I don't give a damn if you're born on the moon. This guy, it doesn't matter to me where he was born. It doesn't matter to me what his birth certificate says. In his heart and in my heart, I know that he is not American. He is not one of us. No matter what he says, he's been lying out his ass the whole time about everything. One thing I can tell you for sure, the president of the United States is like the guy in the HBO, the Showtime series, I believe it's Showtime, I can't remember, is a sleeper. He wants to change this country into something that it was not meant to be. The sooner we get this imposter out of office, the better off we will be as a nation. I can guarantee you that. The president of the United States does not love this country. I say that with a heavy heart. I can see it. Everything he says goes against him being loyal to this country. Everything that he has said and done from the time he first came into office has been contrary to the beliefs of ordinary average Americans. What president has ever gone about the business of apologizing to other nations for America? For America being America. That idiot was apologizing for me and you. For what? We didn't ask him to do that. That's not his job. A sleeper in the White House. Like the TV series Homeland. Good looking, well spoken. Charming, charismatic, and yet seeks to destroy the United States of America. And the only thing you and I can do is do our damnedest to get him out of office next year. I want to thank everybody for listening. We got to keep the devil down in the hole for one more year. Just one more year. Way down in the hole. Thank all my listeners in the house. Solo, Keefon, Frankenstein, Swing Easy, Marine Time, Nuke the Rich.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back.
Karen Hunter, thank you guys.
Well, I beg your pardon.
God bless you.
Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, He's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at His command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole.
Hey,
Jesus' mighty sword, and they'll shield you with their wings, keep you close to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil way down in the hole. 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 You've got to help me keep the devil.